Blog Talk Radio. Hey, welcome to Spec Talk Radio on Friday, August 8th. This is Karen Rand, your host of today's show. And this is brought to you as the Southeast Private Equity Community Radio Show. We initially started this show back in April and have been delivering every Friday valuable information for entrepreneurs and investors on how they can grow their business or invest in the business and ultimately create wealth through the success of some of the industry experts that we bring into this particular venue and the education that we offer. And it's delivered through the Launch Funding Network. That's launchfn.com, launchfn.com, and through the Network of Business Angels and Investors, which is nbani.net. So if today we are covering an interesting topic called regarding setting up boards or building good advisors and board of directors because every early stage company needs to have a good board of directors, a good board of advisors to help them proceed as they grow their business, but also it gives confidence to the investors as they go through that process. And so we have three special guests with us today. Today we have Calvin Clements, the author of The Perfect Board. Calvin, you're on the phone. Are you with me right now?
I'm with you, Karen, here in Baltimore.
Terrific. And then we also have, joining us today is also Marjorie Singley Hall from Above Board Advisors. Is that you, Marjorie? Nope. Okay. She was calling on the other line. And then we also have Rona Wells from the Board of Directors Network. Is that you, Rona?
I'm here.
Okay. Terrific. And I think that's Marjorie on there now. Marjorie, have you joined us?
I have joined you.
Okay. Terrific. Let me set the stage for the folks that are on board with us here. We're going to cover a couple of different topics as it relates to building boards and participating on boards for the entrepreneurs that are listening as well as investors that might end up being on a board. Calvin has written this book, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about it in just a minute, called The Perfect Board, but it really is intended to provide the basics for really any newly elected member of a board of directors as part of what does it mean to be on a board, but then also he'll bring some insights on how to attract good people to be on your board. And then that sets the stage for Marjorie Singley Hall with Above Board Advisors. She brings many, many years' experience in helping companies build solid boards and, in fact, has launched a business specifically to do that. She'll tell us a little bit more about that in just a second. And then Rona Wells with the Board of Directors Network. It's a nonprofit organization that tracks and monitors women's participation on boards, specifically public boards. So, and as an angel investor herself, she's had a number of experiences in participating in early stage private companies on their boards. So welcome, everybody.
So, good to be here.
And it's great to have you all. I think it's going to be a good discussion. So Calvin, first let's kick off and tell a little bit about what was the inspiration for your book and kind of how you got involved in this business to be an expert on talking about folks being on boards.
First, Calvin is way too formal, so how about just Cal?
Okay, Cal. All right, Cal it is.
And 31 years of being on boards of directors, and I have an association management company here in Baltimore, so I've been involved or an executive director or executive vice president of 16 associations, trade associations. And so during those years, I've discovered that many people just didn't have the skills. They weren't prepared. They weren't trained to be on a board of directors. They didn't understand what their responsibilities and duties were. And I felt a primer, and that differs from what you put on your house. That's called a primer, but if you're painting it. But we needed to have something that, that could be just a basic treatise of what they could expect to be on the board. There's books out there, and there's other items out there, encyclopedias and all, but people aren't going to read a textbook. People aren't going to take a lot of time. They want something that's brief and to the point. And that was the impetus for me writing the book, and it's been very, very well received.
Okay, terrific. So great. And how, where is that book available? Where can folks go to get that book, or do you have a website that has information about it?
Sure, they can get it from my website, theperfectboard.com, or they can save some dollars and go to amazon.com or barnesandnobles.com. I can't compete with those folks. They're pretty big companies, and they can sell at a substantial discount.
Okay. All right. Well, perfect. So now, Marjorie, you have been involved with helping folks identify the perfect person to be on their board. So tell us how your audience, how you got started in that and sort of your background and kind of how you do business today and helping companies. I think you work a lot with investment bankers and VCs and different funding sources that are trying to build out boards. And so tell us how you do business.
I do that indeed, Karen, and I actually have two companies who work, which work in that area, Ampersand Associates Incorporated, and we do operating boards and specialty boards through that company. And then a couple of years ago, I created a specialty company to just do advisory boards. It's called Above Board Advisors. And what we do is we create the process around that advisory board so that it's effective. I find that a lot of companies have, quote, an advisory board, unquote, that's never met, or they don't have an effective board because they have no measurables, no expectations set ahead of time, no term limits, that sort of thing. So we create that process around it, and then if they want us to add additional people to that advisory board, we will do that as well. In both companies, it's not industry specific, so we have place people on boards throughout all different sorts of companies, both public and private.
Okay, well, that sets the stage for one of the questions I'm going to have for you guys a little bit later on, but tell our audience again how they can reach you. What's your website?
My website is www.aboveboardadvisors, all one word, .com. And my office number is 404-812-8923. And my email address is Marjorie, M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E, at aboveboardadvisors.com.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, Rona, you're the executive director for the Board of Directors Network. Tell us a little bit about your background and about this great organization and kind of the role you fill in putting boards together and helping people on boards.
Well, my background is actually in the corporate world, but when I retired, I looked around for something, you know, something to do that was meaningful, and I had already been involved in the Board of Directors Network, and I've gotten even further involved. And we try to get more women on boards. We try to and in executive suites. But we've been in trying that for about 16 years now. We put out a study for Georgia public companies, all of them, as a matter of fact, as to whether they have women on their board or not, and women officers or not. And then we try to raise the awareness and help people understand what the value that diversity can bring, and specifically, in our case, women. And that's kind of what we do.
Okay, so good. And how, where would folks go to get more information about the board?
Well, we're on the web, www.boarddirectorsnetwork.org. Just take the of out, boarddirectorsnetwork.org.
Okay. .org. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. All right. Most of our audience are entrepreneurs that are in that private stage. And so, you know, oftentimes they don't, there's a difference between board of advisors and board of directors. And Marjorie, you sort of touched on this, and I know that's sort of part of that cultivating process that you go through, Rona. And I'm sure, Cal, you'll have some insight. But let's get started with Marjorie, talking about the difference between board of advisors and board of directors and the strategic value they bring to a company at different stages.
Even at the early stage, most companies have a board of directors, whether they know it or not, and that board of directors enables them to move the company forward by participating in how the company is managed, decisions that are made in regard to taking the company forward. And basically, they have a fiduciary responsibility to the company. They act in a way that makes them a part of what makes the company go forward and what makes the management team act correctly. The advisory board is a totally different entity, and we have seen a real upswing in advisory board participation in the last few years, primarily because of Sarbanes-Oxley involving public companies and all the restrictions on a board of directors position there, and the liabilities involved. So a lot of people find that as they grow in their career or perhaps approach retirement, they like to serve on advisory boards, which is why we felt there was a niche there to build a company around it. And what your advisory board does is strictly give advice. And you have to be very clear on that if you set it up correctly to start with. They do not have a fiduciary responsibility to the company, and if they work effectively, they can make a lot of difference in how the company grows by offering a safe haven for the principals of the company to go to and get advice that's confidential and helpful from people who've been there and done it. And that makes your most effective advisory board.
So now when a company gets incorporated, they become a C-Corp or S-Corp or LLC, are they required to have a board of directors?
They should have one. In many states, it's something that is a part of how you register your company. But in Georgia, for example, when you register your company in the state of Georgia, which is where we are located, you have to list officers of the company. And basically, to the extent that you're starting out a company, that essentially starts out your board of directors. But you need to have people who are on that board who are not just involved in the day-to-day operations of the company. You need to have people who give outside advice coming in and aren't there, you know, managing employees on a day-to-day basis as well. That's when you begin to expand your board of directors. But a company starting out doesn't need a large one, just the people involved and maybe one or two people from the outside who would be helpful.
Okay, so now, Rona, when you, within the Board of Directors Network, I think one of the coaching processes or sort of for companies, for people that want to be a part of boards on public companies is they might have served on a nonprofit board or they might have served as a board of advisor first. Do you see that as a natural trend for people to go through?
Oh, it definitely is. You can get a lot of experience, particularly on the better-run nonprofits, and you can have some fun, too, contributing, you know, with whatever your passion is. But you've also got the opportunity to be on private boards like Marjorie's explaining and also through advisory boards. Advisory boards are a lot of fun. I've served on several, and you don't have that legal responsibility, but you get to share your advice and your experience and see the company change as a result of it or improve, hopefully, as a result of it. But you do don't have to worry about some of the legalities that are there for the actual board.
Okay. So now, Cal, in writing your book, you know, you talked a lot about how, you know, sort of what to expect and how people, you know, become, be prepared for being on a board of directors. What is one of the steps? Do you see advisory as a stepping stone to that, or is it good for folks to, maybe as a company is growing, to start out as advisory and then morph into being the board of directors? What's been your experience in that area?
I would say that an advisory board is kind of like developing a farm system where you could find some folks that have responsibility of advising, and then you can find out whether or not that they're going to live up to the mantle of actually moving on to the actual board of directors. So from that standpoint, it's a fantastic opportunity for someone to get involved with a company and or nonprofit and display their talents, their skills, and let everybody know that they're interested in moving further.
That's an interesting point that you bring up, because I interviewed just sort of because I'm always trying to get to know very successful people, entrepreneurs, and sort of what their secret sauce was and accomplished from what they did. So I had an opportunity to have lunch with the founder and CEO of one of the fastest growing community banks in Georgia. and trying to understand how he could do it. So within 2 years, he went from raising his foundation money to having, I don't know, like $200 million under in deposits or something, you know, just really phenomenal success. And one of the things that he talked about was was actually because he went after it from a board of directors standpoint. So he got very, very qualified people on his board, and then as investors came on board and they were all excited about what he was doing, they got to be on the board of advisors. And one of the things that he does, he has, like, I think like they have like 10, I don't know the exact numbers, and so I'm not naming the company because I don't want to be all wrong on this, but let's say they have 10 board of directors. He has like 20 board of advisors, and they, two of board of advisors each quarter are allowed to come into the board of directors meeting so they can kind of see what happens in the board of directors meetings, and they're on like almost like a waiting list, so when somebody resigns or the term's up as the board of directors, they get an opportunity to come in and be on the, from board of advisor to board of directors, sort of like you say, it's the seed, it's sort of their farming ground, if you will, for their board of directors. And it was very interesting how he had kind of put this strategy in place, and so he has just a very rich group of directors around him, but then also this sort of demand, if you will, on the advisor side to get on a waiting list to be on their board. I don't know how many other private companies have that kind of success for doing that. Have any of y'all had experience, maybe Rona, you as being on an advisor? I know maybe probably all of y'all have been on board of directors and board of advisors, but have you seen other private companies kind of that go about it that way as one of their strategies to help build their board?
I've seen companies do that. I think that's a real good method. It helps you get to, if you don't know the person, it helps you get to know the person, and it helps the person get to know the company, and both of you decide whether, you know, you really want to move to the board of directors or not. I think that's certainly one way to develop a waiting list for your board. I think the other is there are some people that are just too busy to be on a board of directors because there is a time requirement that goes along with it. It's a whole other step up in terms of responsibilities and such, and yet they have contacts that they may want to share, and they may want to, you know, help the company in other ways. So I think it an advisory board serves at least those two purposes.
And Karen, this let me point out that's one reason why we like to get our directors and other individuals in an organization to sign a commitment form, because with our lifestyles in today's world, people don't have the time, energy, and money to do everything. So we like to get them to sign and recognize the fact that there is a commitment to be on a board, whether it's an advisory or an actual directorship. And by that way, that they are making that commitment to serve, and they understand what's involved, whether it's 3 meetings, 6 meetings, an executive retreat, or whatever is involved in being in that part of that organization.
I think that's an excellent point, Cal. I think that makes the difference also in whether or not a board is effective, whether it's an operating board or an advisory board, because you set your expectations up front, and people don't have surprises down the road, and they participate according to the expectations. And it's a great way to make your board become involved and make it effective.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. You know, you mentioned bank boards, Karen. That's not atypical for bank boards to use advisory boards and particularly community banks, and also a legal board. I'm on a legal board of a bank, a community bank, and we have the advisory board system too, and it is very effective in a lot of ways.
And I think one of the things, let's talk a little bit about the difference between boards on private companies and boards on public companies, because on private companies, you know, it's a credibility statement that the company, one, can attract that level of board or advisors. It's a way for investors that have contributed a significant amount of money or have, you know, key pieces of experience can be involved in the process. And it also is a way when a company doesn't have the ability to hire a lot of people, but they can get some of that expertise from somebody that's part of their advisory board. So in your experience in working with private companies, are they all sort of that win-win sort of setup where, or in some cases, it's really the reputation of that board person, you know, kind of giving that stamp of approval to a private company? Is that as much as their expertise, it's their reputation?
You know, I'll step in on this one. I think one thing that you covered there is something that we need to talk about when we're talking about advisory boards, and we quite frankly go over it with our clients when we talk with them about selecting people for their advisory boards. You don't want to cross over the line where your advisory board becomes an employee of the company, basically, or acts in that capacity. You want to have a relationship there where you can go to them for advice, and so you don't want to have an expectation that they want to, that you want to have them put a dollar amount on business coming in like we had one company try to do. So I think in that regard, as far as bringing business in and adding that value and expertise to the company, you have to be careful about that. But absolutely, when you've got a company that's out there and needs to have a group of people they've surrounded themselves with, I've always said in my own businesses that I try to make a point on my boards to surround myself with people who are smarter than I am and have more expertise than I do so that I can gain from that. And people notice that whether you're going after clients, whether you're going after money or whatever, it does bring credibility.
The major difference that I see between the two, the nonprofit and the for-profit, is simply compensation. The for-profit boards, public traded corporations, can receive compensation. Most nonprofits have some type of clause within their bylaws that you know, forbid those that type of compensation, except to staff. And they may have reimbursed expenses, but generally there's no compensation. A director for public traded group could easily receive, I don't know, I've seen it high as $50,000 to $100,000 in annual compensation, plus maybe stock options. So there is a difference there.
But so am I understanding what you said, Marjorie, and what Cal said is that advisory boards cannot be compensated, but board of directors can?
No, that's not what I said either. It's not what he said either. We're talking about actually kind of two different entities and situations. When you've got an advisory board or an operating board for a for-profit company, absolutely they can be compensated in some fashion. I was just trying to say that you don't want to make those people into, particularly on the advisory board, you don't want to make them employees of the company. So
absolutely, I concur with that.
And what Cal was talking about with the nonprofit, I think, Cal, I was on a panel for an NACD meeting not too long ago, and the moderator said it very well. When are on an advisory board for a for-profit company, you get and you give. And when you're on an advisory board for a nonprofit, you give and you give. So
that's very well put.
I thought that was excellent, and I was reminded myself of being invited to a very high-powered seat on a very high-powered nonprofit board here in Atlanta, and it was never brought up ahead of time, and this was back earlier in my career, and I went to the first board meeting, and the chairman immediately announced, okay, we're coming up on the end of the year, so it's time for everyone to write that check for $5,000.
Hello, welcome to the club.
Yeah, and I tried to appear, you know, calm and whatever. I was like, oh my gosh, where did this come from? But fortunately,
you know, Marjorie, I think we've all learned that lesson.
Sure have. But Karen, to get back to your original question that about the quality of the people, I don't care whether it's a non-profit or for-profit organization; they're all striving to put quality people, educated people, talented, skillful people on their boards because they know that that's the springboard to a successful corporation or organization.
And people with contacts, too.
Yeah, and contacts
right.
as well.
The Rolodex.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the thing that we see that, and so, I'm sorry, I want to make sure if I was a little confused on it that, you know, whoever's listening to this wouldn't be confused.
Absolutely.
So, where, give me, Marjorie, give some more examples of how a company might end up crossing the line on a board of advisor that then ends up being more like an employee than just an advisor. Where's the fine line there? If you can compensate them, so you know, because they brought in a key customer or they brought in, you know, other resources to you, maybe capital resources or something like that. Or just for their time of being involved, how do you make sure that you're not crossing the line that you're treating them like a subcontractor or an employee?
Well, I just had, ironically enough, I just dealt with this situation yesterday with a current client, and we are putting a three-person advisory board together for him. And he wanted a person that could give them some strategic direction in marketing and public relations. And so we had a person in interviewing for that position. He is compensating everyone on his advisory board with some shares of stock and also a per-meeting fee to recognize the fact that they take time from their job, you know, to attend the meeting, and that's worth something. So that's his form of compensation as far as his advisory board is concerned. Well, he got the guy in there and interviewed him for 3 hours, which I was totally amazed about. And the person who was interviewing is very interested in serving on the advisory board. But at the end of the day, I get a telephone call from the candidate, and he says, what I think they are expecting me to do is come into the company and create an entire public relations and marketing plan for them and then assist them in doing that. And he said, I'm just not comfortable with that. I'm very comfortable with helping them with some strategy and walking through some scenarios about how they would do it, you know, what type of people they would hire to do it. But the reality is I own one of those firms. So I became very uncomfortable in that situation because I felt like, okay, what they're trying to do is to get me to do work for free. And not just to give advice, but to do work for free. And so he said, you should know that by the end of the conversation, I said to them, if you want me to present, totally separate from the advisory board, a proposal for my company to come in and do that for you, I'll be glad to do that. But if I'm on the advisory board, I'm there, I think, to give advice. And he said, is that correct? I said, you're absolutely correct. So I was on the phone this morning with the CEO of the company, and I said, you know, you've crossed the line. You need to either have this man come in there as an advisor or you need to hire his company. But it's a very difficult situation when you say to him, I'm going to compensate you with some stock in your meeting time, and then the expectation is you're going to utilize the services and expertise of his company to create things that further your company as to what they would normally do. You're asking him to bring in his resources and his people to work for you under the guise of being an advisory board member. So you've got to make a decision. Do you want this person on your advisory board, or do you want to hire his firm? And that's how I handle that. That to me was a clear crossover situation.
Okay, so it's kind of like it's the difference of whether they're taking something out of your brain and kind of like who you know versus a resource or work, so to speak, that you normally do as a course of business. That might be sort of.
Well, this man perceived it as something that he would bill out as probably maybe a $60,000-$70,000 project over a year or so. And for some stock shares and a meeting fee, which is turning out to be probably about $500 per meeting, they'll meet four times a year, that wasn't reasonable to him. And I was glad that he addressed it in the interview with the client company, and then I followed up and addressed it as well. That's just one sort of situation where you'd have a crossover.
Yeah.
I've had the opposite handle happen as well, and I had to deal with that a year ago. I sent a candidate into interview for an advisory board position, and he pitched for a job for himself. So, that wasn't good either. But that's part of what we do. So we handle those situations when they come up.
So Rona or Cal, you have anything you want to add to that sort of that conversation about the fine line of?
Well, I just would like to add that in the overall board environment, we have what we call the equation of expectations, where the different parties try to make sure that the expectations the other thinks they're delivering or receiving are the same, because we've run into that, and obviously Marjorie's just had an experience on that. But that's usually the biggest disconnect with boards, is the people just don't understand what the expectations are of one another.
I agree.
Yeah, there's no substitution for having those expectations written and understood well.
Yeah, it seems like, Rona, I attended one of the Board of Directors Network's meetings where that was sort of the panel discussion about how people got involved, particularly on public boards where you had that fiduciary responsibility, and they were all, before they realized it, they were embroiled in doing a bunch of stuff they weren't expecting to do. I know, do you have some insight you can bring to that kind of scenario, how somebody could be on a board, a public board, and that kind of stuff happen?
Well, you know, I'm sure just about everything's happened. But I just echo what Marjorie and Cal said. You've got to really understand before you step onto a board what's expected. And, you know, Marjorie gave that good example that many of us have been through when we were younger in our careers and went to join a nonprofit board and didn't realize they also expected you to write a check. You know, you just really do need to know what's expected of you and get educated on it, particularly with public boards. There's a whole realm of things you need to know over and above what you'd need to know for a nonprofit or even a private board. But they're all serious, and you need to take it seriously. It's like having, in a way, another job, and it is a responsibility. And advisory boards are a responsibility also.
The number one lie in the director's area, and I'm sure that Rona, you and Marjorie have heard this, you don't have to do anything when you get on the board. You know, just come on and serve. You can put your name on the resume,
yeah.
and you don't have to do anything. We've experienced that quite a bit where some, you know, overzealous people have coerced other folks to get on the board and said, just come on. It's a good thing to do. And I think the environment has changed. Maybe 20 years ago that was allowed, but today you've got to be aware of what your responsibilities are because
yeah.
you do have legal responsibilities when you sign your name to the form.
Well, that's kind of what you cover in your book as well. I know you use sort of an example of a situation between a lady, Rebecca Mayfield, that's just been invited to be on the board of directors and sort of her uncovering all that's expected. And so you cover that kind of thing in your book on how to be prepared to be on a board and finding out what's expected of you?
Yeah, I put a little narrative in the book, both the beginning and the ending part, so that it wasn't a boring thing. Because, I mean, you get in talking about responsibilities and duties and all the other things, you know, leadership and quorums and meetings. That can turn a lot of people off and really make them walk away. So with a little bit of narrative, it kind of eases it in and makes it an enjoyable read. But there are responsibilities. That's it. And what we tell all of our directors and prospective directors that you do have responsibilities. But we find that people don't shy away from that for those reasons. They're going to shy away more because they don't have the time rather than, you know, honoring up for the responsibility. Many people will still live up to the responsibility as long as they're aware. If you make them aware and tell them this is what's expected, there's plenty of people out there that volunteer.
Sure.
At least, Rona, do you agree with that and Marjorie?
Oh, absolutely. And I find that people are flattered to be invited, you know, to be on boards. And I always try to, when we talk to our clients, we say, you know, not everybody you interview and you would like to have on the board necessarily is going to say yes to you, because the same thing you were just talking about, Cal, that it is a responsibility, it is a time and time commitment, and people really and truly take that seriously. And so it's better for them to, I had a guy turn down a position on a board in Midtown Atlanta, and it broke the CEO's heart. I had to hear about it for a week. He said, I can't believe it, I feel so rejected. Well, it's turned out the guy said, I can't serve on your board, but I will help you. And, you know, he's given him quite a bit of his personal time to help him. He just didn't want to make the time commitment that says I have to be at this meeting and I have to, you know, have these measurables. And it's turned out to be a win-win situation for the CEO. But, oh, man, he just, you know, was like, I can't believe it. It's just like, I really need him. Well, you know, he respects the facts that he really likes your corporation and he would like to do a good job for you, but you also need to respect the fact that it is a time commitment and he doesn't have the time and he's telling you that up front. But go further, he said he'd help you. So call on him. So
yeah, I just experienced that recently where I told a guy that I really couldn't be formally part of his board of advisors, but I wanted to stay in touch with him and because I was interested in his company. And I think that's a good point, Marjorie. I think there are lots of people out there that are willing to serve. There's also some that are starting to not want to serve. I was reading a Fortune think it was a Fortune article on the internet about that recently, that, and it was talking about big public companies, though, in this case, and it was because of all the requirements that have happened in the last 5 to 6 years since Sarbanes-Oxley. But there are some that won't, but there's still plenty that won't do and will.
Well, the one thing that is sort of coming out for public companies is being very, very careful what you write down in a meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It all becomes part of that public record of what happened. And sometimes an incomplete note, you know, because you just jotted something down, can end up conveying wrong sort of information about what happened in a meeting or vice versa. And so that was something I learned from one of your meetings about being very careful about that.
It's not just public companies either. You've got that same liability with private companies, and in some cases even with nonprofits. So you just really need to know not only what the expectations of you are, but you need to know what the legal responsibilities and concerns are too. You need to be pretty educated about things.
Yeah. So now, obviously, Cal covers that a little bit in his book, but are there resources that y'all know about that people can go to learn more about this, more about sort of how to put those agreements in place, or places that they can go to get some of that information if they're trying to do it right from the start?
I think that Rona's organization, Board of Directors Network, is very valuable. They do a lot of education and provide a lot of information, particularly to women. And I've also found that it's been helpful to me in my profession and also as a board member to be a part of the National Association of Corporate Directors. That's a group that does a good job as well. Cal's book, as you mentioned earlier, sounds like a great resource for a person who wants to be on a board.
I'll have to send Rona and Marjorie a copy, huh?
Love to have one. And I will read it.
Good.
I will read it. We were talking about this morning, reading business books. I love to read business books. I think it's wonderful when people are sharing that sort of information. And I pass that on to others, you know, as well. I think we all live in an information-intensive world, and sometimes the information we get over the internet is good and sometimes it's not. So it's great to know somebody personally or have been involved with them in some way and know that, you know, the information they're giving out is correct and good.
I think you've also got professional service firms that can help you out a lot. Your law firm, your accounting firm, they all understand the laws and what needs to happen how you can set some of these things up and avoid some of the pitfalls.
Yeah, if you're going to be on a public board of a large corporation these days and they present a contract to you to serve on that board, it would behoove you always to run that by your attorney. That's excellent advice. And also your accountant, because a lot of times you've got stock involved, you've got different types of compensation, as Cal mentioned earlier, and the accountant needs to look at that and the attorney needs to look at that.
I do think that, you know, Marjorie mentioned the internet. I do think that the internet and any other source of information, business media, that can help a prospective director or someone who thinks that they might want to be on an advisory board or a nonprofit or a for-profit board, whether it's private or public, at least understand what they need to know. Even if it might not be the right information, I think that's a good caveat. You know, you need to be aware of the information you get, but it does raise some red flags about some of the things you need to know. And then there's, for potential directors, there are seminars that universities do. There are the NACD that Marjorie mentioned. There are other organizations, that sort of thing. But from the company standpoint, I think you can rely on your professionals and folks like Cal that have done a lot of research and can guide you in the right direction.
I was just going to add that now in the nonprofit arena, there's probably 24 nonprofit centers developed around the country, and one I know for sure is the Arizona State University has a fantastic nonprofit center that teaches about boards, and they go into the corporate boards as well. So your folks should maybe try to look at their local universities for more information. But I concur with what
Right. That's what I was going to say, because I know I've received mailers from one of the local universities for a board of directors training kind of a thing. So I guess a lot of those universities are offering that now.
But that's all been developed in the last 4 to 5 years. There were some more smaller versions maybe back in the late 90s, but that's a recent phenomenon, because before that there was just nothing offered. And you also have, out of D.C., the Board Source,
yes,
which appeals to the nonprofit organizations and American Society of Association Executives.
Well, there's a also through the Atlanta Women's Foundation here in Atlanta, and one of the ways that I got involved originally a number of years ago on a couple of boards I was interested in, nonprofit boards, is they have a program called Women on Board, and they've developed it past the original program that I was in. But it's really a program on how to get on a nonprofit board, and then they also have a for example, I had an interest in a certain kind of cancer, had not had it in my family, but wanted to be on that particular board here in Atlanta, and they connected me with those folks after I finished their program, and that was a great way for me to have an intro. I didn't know anybody there, and I ended up on their board, and now I'm on their advisory board. So it's, you know, there are a lot of resources out there. And, you know, one thing I would like to emphasize is that the nonprofit world is so different from the for-profit world, and you've got different sets of issues than what you're dealing with in for-profit. So, but you also, as someone mentioned previously, you've still got some responsibilities, obligations, and I find that I have one nonprofit board I serve on right now requires more of my time than the for-profit boards. Because I do my homework before I go to those board meetings.
You're one of the unusual ones then, because a lot of people don't do their homework.
I'd like to toss a resource out there as far as sort of like the agreements and this kind of stuff. I attended a seminar that this gentleman put on, Stuart Levine, and he talks about agreements with your board or your board of advisors, and he wrote a book called The Book of Agreement, which it doesn't actually have samples of the agreements, but it talks about the elements that need to be in an agreement when it comes to different folks, you know, specifically to the board of directors agreement, to, you know, other, all kinds of types of agreements that you might do. But because that was one of the things he had specifically spelled out, because that's a challenge that, you know, particularly early stage companies have in setting up the right expectations with their boards, and, you know, identifying people to be on their boards and all of those kind of things. So thank you for sharing some of those examples of places that folks can go. Now, when it comes to recruiting for a board, obviously, Marjorie, you have you've seen a need in that, and you, as most aspiring entrepreneurs, saw an opportunity in the marketplace and built an organization around it to be able to do that. And that's similar to somebody, you know, trying to recruit an executive within their company, and they hire a professional firm to go and do that. What are some ways when folks maybe don't have the means to hire a professional to do that? Is there we struggle with this all the time with the early stage companies that are coming through LaunchFN to try to get in front of NBA and I, in front of the investors, and it's just, you know, three guys in a garage kind of a thing. They don't really have a board of advisors, a board of directors. We tell them they need to go get one, and they sort of scratch their head. So what is a way, you know, obviously folks, whenever possible, should hire a professional to do the stuff, but is there a way, what are some thoughts that people should go through when they're thinking about how to find people or locate people to be on their boards, and what are some ways that they can go about, you know, attracting people to be on their boards if they don't know about Marjorie, or they don't have the means necessarily to hire a firm to do that?
Well, and I'm happy to speak to that. And truly, we're not the place to go if you're a startup company. We do charge for our services, and most of them are on a shoestring, and as you said, a lot of them are still in the garage. But the one thing I would encourage them not to do, I hate to start with a negative, but we end up correcting this later on if they do it, is to start with friends and family or Uncle Bob or I just rotated Uncle Bob off the board last month. It was not pretty, but we did it. And you end up with, you know, you don't ask your best friend from college. You don't ask. What you need to sit down and do if you're a company just starting out is, for one thing, keep it small to start out with. You know, I find out sometimes after the fact, I had a company that came to me last year, and I just shook my head. They had 15 people on their board and less than $500,000 in revenue. And, you know, I'm like, where did you come up with these people? Well, we asked so-and-so. So you have to be very strategic, first of all. And I would sit down and say, who in a related industry or who do we know out there that can bring some value to our company at this point and not just be a name on our website? Because that's another thing they fall into pretty rapidly, actually. But say we need somebody to help us with some strategy. That might be one person. If we're in the medical device industry, maybe we need somebody that's got a good background in medical device and sort of a name out there, been there, done it, and could give us some good advice there. Say we might be positioning ourselves to get some money or be acquired or whatever. Maybe someone with a very strong financial background or someone who is in an industry that's related to that. And sit down and make a list of the people you know and the people that you know and would probably reasonably expect that they might help you. But the second thing to do is to make a list of people who you would really like to have, don't know that well, but feel like they would bring great value. And, you know, all you have to do is get out there and ask. And like I mentioned earlier, people are flattered, and they'll tell you whether or not they can serve. But they're flattered to be asked to be on a board, and I have never found that not to be the case, quite frankly. So it's just you have to approach them correctly, and you have to have some sort of measurable in your head ahead of time, so you can't just say, hey, would you be on my advisory board? We'd like to put your picture on our website, and we may or may not call you. You need to say, we'd like to be able to call on you this much, and we'd like to have, you know, meetings X number of times a year. And we do expect people to provide some form of compensation, and that's a surprise many times to a startup company. But even if it's just a small amount of stock or whatever, it is a great incentive to those people to come in and help you. You'd be surprised at the people who just like to feel like they're participating in the growth of that company. So those would be the things I would advise a startup company to do. And the other thing I would advise, never start out with more than three people. You can always add to it. If you get the wrong people on there, it's very difficult to get them off. And term limits. Put term limits in.
Yeah, I put the term limits on it.
Yeah, I think the advisory board is a great means to do some things when you're early on as opposed to the legal board. And Marjorie's exactly right. And you've got to articulate those expectations.
A good recruiting area for, and we call it leadership development, but a good area to find folks is, and it depends upon your city, but the Chamber of Commerce. A lot of businesses are members of that. You can meet some great people who may be able to assist you, especially a startup company.
Okay, sure. So, like, if you're in, like, one of the things we talk about, like, say for somebody who has a consumer product, you know, go find somebody that has experience in consumer products or an executive in a company that has taken a consumer product to market so they can, you know, advise you sort of on the supply chain issues perhaps or on, you know, branding issues or, you know, validate that your market expectations and how long it's going to take it to market or how much it's going to cost to market it are correct as a way to tap into, you know, people within the industry that you're trying to target.
Well, unless they're a direct competitor.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
Well, that actually comes up quite frequently. I'm sure you've come across that, Cal. I mean,
yes.
Do we put some two things? Do we put our clients on our board? I don't think so. Do we put a competitor on our board? Why would you want to do that? But, you know, it does come up. It comes up fairly regularly with us. I just had a company last week that said I'd like to put two clients on there. I said, what if they, you know, what if the relationship with them goes south, God forbid, in 6 months and they're on your advisory board? And also, how would you feel about, you know, being a client and you look at a company's advisory board and another client who's in competition with you is on their advisory board? You have to think these things through.
Well, and that sets up a potential conflict of interest, too.
You yes. bet.
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, I was thinking, like, say if you were a popcorn company, then you might, you know, want to go get some, find somebody that's in that's a, you know, a manufacturer's rep or a branding thing for a, you know, maybe not a potato chip company, but there's other food products that are snack foods that would be, you know, would follow the same sort of process, if you will, for example.
Here's the beauty of where we are right now with advisory boards, in my personal opinion. I am a baby boomer, but there are a whole lot of us out there, and they're getting towards the end of their career. Of course, I'll be working when I'm 90, forming another company, but that's another story, and hopefully serving on some boards. And I've got a ways to go to get to be 90, but I am one of the new baby boomers coming into the marketplace, and I see a lot of very fine executives either cutting back or retiring or whatever. That is a great source of people who can come in and help you on an advisory board.
So
and
sometimes
there's millions of them.
Right.
Yes.
Would you find them through their financial planners or just reading the newspaper and seeing when somebody's retiring? I mean, how, just word of mouth? Maybe friends and family can tell you who those people are?
In a lot of different ways. I have a lot of them in my database here, of course. We've gotten enough of a name out there so that people actually call us now and say, I'd like to be in your database to be considered if something comes up in the future, and we profile those people out. But, you know, if you've got a company that is out there and you know someone in the company, say in middle management, and you really admire the way that company's gone forward and they have a retired executive, that would be a source of finding someone. But a lot of times these people make themselves available, and I also would say that it's amazing to me, and just in the last year, the number of people who come to us who are retiring and they want to go on to boards as part of their retirement, and actually that's their supplemental income in retirement, particularly on the big boards. They make big money on the big operating boards for public companies. So I had an extraordinarily high-level executive come in here 2 weeks ago and say, okay, I'm retiring from such and such company, and he was CEO, and he said, and the next career I'm going to have is serving on boards. And we're seeing that more and more, which I think is very interesting.
You know, Karen, I think another source is potentially your investors. And it depends on who your investor is, obviously, and what their realm of influence is. But sometimes I've seen companies that have some very influential investors and, you know, can point the direction toward introducing them to others that might help that company. And then they've got something, invested there in it, and they want to get the right kind of people advising the company.
Exactly.
Right. So I think those were all the great ideas on, I hadn't really thought about the fact that there is sort of this growing population of people with great experience, and then now with additional time and ability to sort of give back, that desire to give back and share their expertise. And that's, I think, one of the areas that is that people really haven't tapped into. And maybe it's the folks within, you meet the guys in the middle manager or the in a company that through the chamber, as Cal suggested, and then you can target somebody that might be a little bit higher up within the company that's retiring to take a role like that, and that could be a way to, once you set your sights, you've done the work, as you described, it says here's the kind of skilled resource we want to have on our advisory board, and sort of make your short list of what companies could they be coming from or what industries would they be coming from or certain places that we might be able to look, and then go about the networking and spreading the word and putting the word out there. And I think, some of these social networks like LinkedIn are probably a good source to be able to identify some folks within specific industries that or specific companies that you might be able to tap into or at least get a foot in the door to ask the question.
Yeah, and one other thing, too, is that you can actually identify the type of person that you're looking for. If you perchance need somebody with legal skills or marketing skills or sales skills or an accountant to serve on that board, you can actually identify that person and go after those kinds of people. I'm sure you do that all the time, Marjorie, don't you?
I do. I do indeed. We like to build up that database, and I'm always watching out for people who are, in certain areas particularly. And actually, I probably have meetings with those sorts of folks 2-3 times a week. I had one this morning at breakfast. Gentleman that I think would be excellent for a board, and actually a woman here in Atlanta I've done a lot with over the years recommended him to me, referred him in to us. And I had not met him before. I don't know why we have not crossed paths before. But Atlanta is bigger than we think. And he would make a great board member. Interviewing him, I could see where he, and he's at the point where he's about to retire. He said maybe 2 to 3 years.
Karen, if you don't mind me asking Marjorie a question, are you seeing any trends in the type of people?
The type of people who are wanting to
be on
board? Yeah,
I mean their skill sets.
Just primarily, the people who are coming to me are upper management, but it's not industry specific, and the skill sets aren't specific necessarily, other than they are executives. But what I am finding is a lot of times I will find a person coming to me now that maybe I would not have thought about, say, 5 years ago when our practice was more geared towards technology. I'll find a person that comes to me like the gentleman I placed on a board last week who was CEO of a major national food chain, and then in his second career was in the last 8 years he's been CEO of a technology company. And he felt like his management skill sets transposed over both of those. So we were delighted to talk to him because he had that dual background, and he can give perspectives to a lot of companies along the way. I mean, he has done everything from supply chain management to distribution to, you know, how you integrate his technology into multiple companies. And what a great set of skills. I guess we're seeing more of that. You know, what I think has happened, this is just my personal perspective, but I've given it a lot of thought, is I'm old enough to have been around through many cycles in industry in this city and beyond. And back when we had the big technology boom and then the technology crash, which we're all aware of,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people took their skill sets and reinvented themselves into other industries. And I guess that's what we're seeing more than anything. He was kind of the reverse of that. But I think that's what we're seeing more than anything, and it gives us a broader base as far as people coming in who may have headed up a technology company. It went under after 2001, after 9/11, and then they found themselves without a job, and so they went into manufacturing. And we're seeing those people coming up towards what they consider to be maybe towards the end of their careers, and we're seeing a lot of those. And I think it's very interesting. I think the baby boomers, some of them can't afford to retire completely. Others just want to stay involved. We're living longer, and they don't view themselves as being put out to pasture anymore. So unlike my, you know, family members who reached that age in the generation before me, who retired and either went to the beach or became involved in the community or whatever, these people want to get back involved with companies. They don't want to lose that edge. They want to be involved. Very interesting.
It is very interesting. So do y'all have any other questions for each other?
Excuse me. I don't, but thank you, Karen.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, it is about that time to wrap up, so I'd like you each to go through again your contact information or your website so folks that maybe have tuned in late or whatever or didn't write it down the first time around will know how to reach you to get more information and learn more about what it is that you do. I know, Cal, you obviously aren't just an author, so you have, a management consulting company, so you can, give that website as well if you like as far as letting folks learn a little bit more about what you do.
Sure. The website for the book, The Perfect Board, is theperfectboard.com, and the website for my management company is clemensmgmt.com, and either one of those you can hit the contact button to send me an email, or if you want other information, has the phone number and address is listed. But Karen, it's been a great pleasure being with you, and I was excited to be on with Rona and Marjorie. They got a lot of information. I'm going to go to both of their websites and check them out too.
Okay, good.
Good.
So, Marjorie?
It's www.aboveboardadvisors.com, and you can reach me at Marjorie, M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E, at aboveboardadvisors.com, or on my office number. My private line's 404-812-8923. And thank you again, Karen and Cal, and it was a pleasure to meet you over the phone. And, Rona, it's always good to be on a call with you.
Yeah, I've missed seeing you lately, Marjorie.
and
the Board of Directors Network is www.boarddirectorsnetwork.org. And you can always, put that into the search engine if you don't quite. It's a long URL. But anyhow.
And folks here in Atlanta you have an upcoming meeting or something that you might want to tell folks about, because you're always looking for new members and new women that want to get plug in and learn how to be on board. So how would they?
The next one's October 16th, and it's a dinner, and it's our awards dinner where we recognize an outstanding board woman, and we will also recognize 3 to 5 executive level women that are in the pipeline for boards. And again, we're talking generally public boards and in some cases the larger private boards. But, we're out there, and it'll be October 16th. We've got Mike Eskew from former chairman and CEO of UPS speaking.
So. Fantastic.
Good deal.
So thanks, Karen. This was fun.
Well, thank you very much, all of y'all, for taking time out of your schedules to be a part of this and share this information. And I'm sure a lot of folks will get great value from it and looking at how to build a board, how to be on a board, all different aspects of being on a board or being a part of a board and the value that they bring to early stage all the way through to public companies. And again, this is Karen Rands with Spec Talk Radio. To learn more about what we do, please go to the Launch Funding Network website, which is www.launchfn.com. And, of course, we have blogs. The information about this particular session will be submitted on the Entrepreneur Blog Space. It's Entrepreneur and Blog, blogspace.com. And please go there. Check that out, add your comments, and tune in next week for the next session. The next Spec Talk Radio will cover mitigating risk for investors. When investors are investing in early stage companies, it's the riskiest of all investments, but there are some ways that you can mitigate your risk, and we'll be covering that with a whole bunch of different experts contributing to that. So tune in next Friday at noon for the mitigating risk, and thank you very much. This concludes the Spec Talk Radio covering boards, and everybody have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Cal, Marjorie, and Rona.
Same to you, and
you.
It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.